Hello, good morning, and you are welcome along to another RTE Rugby podcast, our second podcast of the week. If you didn't see already, a couple of days ago, I spoke to Johnny Holland on Tuesday. We just gave our early thoughts on Ireland-New Zealand this weekend, looking back on the All Blacks' win against England last Saturday, and predicting, I suppose, what we thought was going to happen with the team selections. We were right to a certain point. We didn't envisage Tadhg Furlong pulling out with a hamstring injury. But if you do want to listen back to that, jump back in your podcast feeds or your YouTube feeds and you should be able to find it easily enough. Bernard Jackman is with me on this Thursday morning podcast, a day out from Ireland against New Zealand. And Bernard, before we jump into it, I have to say, like, Friday night test match has thrown me all week. I don't know what day I have. I think myself and all the other journalists were so ingrained where 90% of Ireland tests are on a Saturday afternoon that our weeks and schedules are laid out where it's, you know, Tuesday afternoon, that's when Ireland are doing media. Maybe on a Wednesday, someone else is doing media. All day yesterday, I was calling it Thursday. I don't know what day I have.
Yeah, it affects your social life as well. I was in town last night. The lads from the Rugby Pod were over doing a live show in the Harcourt Hotel. So I met them for a bit of grub. And then, I've got a pre-match thing tonight with Justin Marshall and Darren Cave. So, yeah, you just got your weeknights are now your weekends. And tomorrow night's going to be, Friday night's basically a Saturday night. Social life is picking up a little bit and changing around. But it's great. I think it's great. It's obviously not ideal for people traveling from the country, you know, have to take a half day off work and things like that. But as a novelty to mix in, I think it is a nice feature.
Yeah, and I'm not going to complain either because it means I can now go to Mary's in Terenure on Saturday afternoon, which I'm very much looking forward to. The other bit around this game, I don't know what your thoughts on it. It was just something that cropped up in the office yesterday. Someone said to me today, did I think that this game was coming in under the radar a little bit in terms of build-up? I'm not sure how you feel. I'll tell you what my thoughts on it were if you go first. Do you think it's crept up on people?
Yeah, 100%. I think it'll kind of kickstart the rugby season as such. You know, yeah. I know that it's been like the game in Croke Park was brilliant, you know, in terms of getting people out and into a stadium for that URC game between Munster and Leinster. There's been decent crowds, in fairness, at all the Irish provincial URC games, but it just hasn't really captured the imagination of the general public. Like often, like this week is the first time I've had people stop me at a petrol station or in Tesco, you know, saying, you know, what about the All Blacks match? You know what I mean? And even that, I think, probably hasn't been hyped up. Obviously, Ireland going to Portugal, and not being around, lack of press, you know, the All Blacks being less active than normal. Like I remember when they were previously sponsored by AIG, they were all over the place the week of a test match and getting out there. So, and I look at that, it's obviously sponsorship led, but at least they're out and out and about. So, yeah, I do think, and maybe it's a change. The problem is Neil, is that a lot of these teams are now are looking to be more in-house driven in terms of their content, you know.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, no, but
it's making life tough for us.
Yeah, exactly. It is, but it does also, I mean, it means that if you're not following the All Blacks or following Irish rugby team, you're not across as you normally would be. And that's a pity because the reality is Ireland's a great country for sport and all sports. And sports people tend to jump across from sport to sport and depending on the event and occasion. And the fact if it becomes too much driven by in-house content, you'll miss that chance to actually engage with them. So it's just a fine line, I reckon.
Yeah. And I personally, I think there's a massive contradiction between if we're driving through this 20-minute red card because it makes the game more entertaining and we want more people engaging with rugby, but the two of the best teams in the world are almost shutting up shop the week before an enormous test match and not making themselves available to be seen and heard in the build up to a game. I think there's a bit of a contradiction there. I would say, like as you were saying, the fact that Ireland were away in Portugal and New Zealand have kept their media activities a bit more limited this week has definitely contributed to the slower than usual build up. But also, and I saw someone point out, I can't remember who it was, but you mentioned like the way they would do those link ups with AIG, who obviously aren't their sponsor anymore, but you do see them out and about at less kind of gigs and stuff like that. And it probably is a sign that they obviously take Ireland a lot more seriously than they used to. I would say 10 years ago when they were coming over here, it was very much we can do all the fun things and we can get out and about because they knew they were going to go home with a win.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I listened to an interview with Zinzan Brook last week, and they're talking about the rivalry and the Sexton Ione, you know, sledging back and forth. And he kind of said, well, look, to be honest, we didn't really have that in our day because, you know, we kind of didn't ever question whether we were going to win or not. We just, and now, you know, against Ireland, England, you know, England to a lesser extent. But the reality is, you know, Ireland, they saw as a plucky team who'd give them a game for 50 minutes and then they'd run out of steam. And that's changed massively. But like, definitely, like, you know, from the media I've seen this week, that, you know, the only things really we've had from the All Blacks is Beauden Barrett pulling a pint at Gleeson's, which is, you know, not earth-shattering news. And then, you know, a little quick interview with Caleb Clark, and he talks about his roots, his Irish roots, where his descendants came from the north of Ireland to Samoa to grow potatoes, you know. And that's a sad thing too, because there's a lot of interesting stories in that All Blacks team. And if they leave Ireland on Saturday to go on to their next destination without being able to tell those stories, I think it's an opportunity missed.
Yeah, and like, we even got a chance yesterday to ask Scott Roberts about his time playing rugby up in Ards, in Newton Ards in County Down, when he was an 18-year-old in 1993 coming over and played 6 months in the AIL, and spoke really, really fondly of his time there, and by all accounts is still well connected with the people up there, and he's been chatting to a few old friends this week. So, you know, those are the stories that you do actually kind of like to get, and nice little nuggets on the week of a match. Let's get into the game itself then, obviously, because the team news came out yesterday. Ireland and New Zealand both named their matchday squads. Starting with Ireland, it probably wasn't even a surprise by the time the team was announced, because we'd been told that Tadhg Furlong had picked up a hamstring injury. So Finlay Beelam is the obvious one in there, joining Andrew Porter and Ronan Kelleher in the front row. Kelleher is fit. Rob Herring is fit on the bench as well, so no place for Dave Heffernan. Joe McCarthy and James Ryan in the second row. So it means Tadhg Byrne, Josh van der Fleer and Caelan Doris is the back row. Byrne in the back row, just as we would have seen in the second test in Durban, when I think everyone would say the Irish pack really, really fronted up in that game against the Springboks. No real surprises in the back line. Hugo Keenan, Jameson Gibson-Park and Mac Hansen are all back in the starting team, along with Gary Ringrose, Bundiaki, James Lowe and Jack Crowley, with a bench of Rob Herring, Keane Healy, Tom O'Toole, Ian Henderson, Peter O'Mahony, Conor Murray, Kieran Frawley and Jamie Osborne. Two changes for the All Blacks after their win against England last Saturday. You have Asafa Amua coming in for Cody Taylor at hooker, and Beauden Barrett obviously is out. Damian McKenzie starts at out half. Both of those players missing out due to concussion. I think the obvious thing that came from those team selections, Bernard, is the Ireland team is a team picked to win a test match this week, while the All Blacks squad is probably selected with a couple of years down the line in mind. Now, granted, New Zealand had a larger turnover of players after the World Cup, you'd probably argue, with Brodie Retallick, Sam Whitelock, Aaron Smith all retiring from Test Rugby, Lester Fanganuku's gone away as well, Richie Mwanga is over in Japan as well. So there obviously is a lot more change on their side, but the Ireland team is a team picked to win a Test match this week and nothing else in mind.
Yeah, and they're coming off a narrow World Cup final defeat, and we're coming off a quarterfinal defeat, but we're the ones who are doing the least amount of change. I think it's, in some ways, I don't think Farrell has a huge amount of options, and that's worrying. But he definitely is of the mindset of the here and now. And we kind of saw that in the build-up to the French World Cup as well. It probably cost us in the end, where we hadn't got enough game time into certain players or in certain positions. I thought that's been the issue. I think our first 17, 18 is as good as anyone's. It's just obviously the depth after that. And the challenge and these emerging Ireland tours are obviously there's an eye on that. We obviously been very lucky. We've had good under 20 sides consistently over the last 5 or 6 years, but it's the three or four individuals who are going to become the next Caelan Doris, the next Dan Sheehan. They're the ones who are going to make a difference. And you see England A, you know, getting a fixture in against New Zealand 15, again trying to find more depth, trying to find those real diamonds that can help you win test matches. And Farrell has looked at every single player playing that's eligible for Ireland, playing in Ireland, and he's gone back to a lot of the same players again. And you look at you definitely. I don't think the Peter Mahoney, Conor Murray calls are on form, right? No, they're not out of form. They're not in bad. Sorry, they're not in bad form, but just obviously Pete's only come back from an injury that he suffered against the Ospreys. Played 40 minutes. Conor has been really second fiddle to Craig Casey in terms of first choice for Munster, and done fine coming on and when he played, but like not pulling up trees. But yes, you know, Henderson as well. Farrell trusts them, and trust is a massive part of, and respect for what they've done in the past. And to be fair to them, and to be fair to Farrell, when they've put on that green jersey for him, they have played to a level higher than maybe they've been playing for their provinces. So, you know, until that changes, why wouldn't he go for players that he trusts and can add to the squad? I think the Conor Murray one is interesting, and I think they probably would have looked at what happened in the end game in Twickenham last week, or Allianz Twickenham, and Randall, you know, that nippy, high tempo nine wasn't suited to what they wanted to close out the game.
Yeah,
And
like if this was something that came up in the office yesterday, we were talking about, like, Craig Casey has obviously been ahead of Murray in the pecking order at Munster for the last year, and when it was just Casey and Murray available to Andy Farrell for the first test in South Africa, it was Casey who started with Murray on the bench. Is Murray on the bench, like, is it having the change of pace option?
yeah, oh, I think it has to be. It must be, because if not, he would have went. You know, Craig is more like Gibson Park. Gibson
Yeah.
Park is obviously his own style.
But if you need to do something different in a match, or you need you need the second option of changing the
Yeah,
pace of the game.
100%. No, I understand. And you know what? This the new focus on kick escort may actually bring Connor's strength back into the game a little bit more, and certainly. Certainly, I think that's why Ben Spencer got picked against New Zealand. Now, the problem is, at the moment, the referees are much stricter around the nines being box kicking quicker, which really doesn't suit Connor. Connor's quite rigid in his routine, his build up. He likes to kick on his own terms, and when he does, he kicks incredibly well. But the big focus in the try laws is effectively about the escort. So theoretically, there's more benefit to kick more, and obviously box kicking is a high percentage of the contestables. But now you don't have a blocker in front of you, so that's making it harder as well for the kickers, and then obviously they're putting more pressure on them. So we've seen nines getting harassed. And I suppose I would say that Farrell will trust Murray not to get harassed and potentially go in and close out the game. But are Connor, Henderson, and Peter going to be there for Australia in 2027? It's unlikely. It's unlikely all three of them will. So 100% he's picking for here now. And I think, to be honest, I think beating the All Blacks is still a big scalp. It's the effects of it in terms of the confidence and all those things are probably worth being short-term focused for now. It's still, you know, a long way to the World Cup, which at some stage we're going to have to look at other options. And we know Six Nations isn't the time down Ireland to traditionally do that. And you look at England, you look at Wales in particular. Wales have no choice, but Wales have more players now who are exposed to international rugby, and they know where they're at. Even Randall had a difficult, whatever, 20 minutes last weekend, but he's either going to sink or swim. You know, he's either sink or swim, and he may end up being a viable option for them. Unfortunately for us, We aren't getting that chance really to test this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's a case of if that's the same match day 23 going out against Australia or Argentina in a week's time, there's more questions even to be asked about it. You know, you can understand going all out like this for a game against New Zealand.
Yeah.
On the issue, on the nature of that, and we'll start talking about Tighthead specifically, Tadhg Furlong being out and Finlay Beelam coming in a moment or so. But linked up to that, like a couple of people have been in touch. We threw the door open for questions there on Twitter this morning, and two in particular, one from Max Sporty C, and one from JWL 1992. The first one, props. Why, what, how have Ireland ended up with Tom O'Toole covering Tighthead? And Lou said, do Ireland have one of the weakest depth charts behind Porter and Tadhg Furlong / Finlay Beelam? And then the second of those messages, the front row replacements for a game against the All Blacks wouldn't inspire you. Is this a reality check about the number of genuine test quality players we have in Ireland? So you look at, on the tight side, Tadhg Furlong, 31 years old, misses out. Finlay Beelam is 33. Like, no guarantee that either of those players are going to still be in their prime by the time a World Cup comes around in 2.5, 3 years. Then on the Loosehead side, Cian Healy, 37 years old, is still the only player putting his hand up behind Andrew Porter for minutes at Loosehead.
It's incredibly worrying. It's incredibly worrying. And like, if that was to happen to Andrew Porter in the first 5 minutes tomorrow, I mean, that's asking a huge amount of Cian Healy to go 75 minutes. And that, like, any Cian will do it, and he won't let you down. But, you know, a scrum that's tiring and doesn't have the ability to bring on fresh power could cost you the game. That's the reality of it. And in England, scrum effectively cost them the game at the weekend, last weekend, when they didn't have the same level of impact off the bench as the Kiwis did. And it even was, you know, it caused the issue with the drop goal at the end, that poor scrum meant they were on the back foot. So that is a worry. You know what? It's actually scary how unobvious it is who's next up. You know, like I'm a fan of Jack Boyles, and I know that Farrell has brought him in as in part of the training squad. Tom Clarkson has also had some moments where you think, whoa, okay. Well, he certainly moves really well. But has a lot of work to do on his scrummaging. But they're effectively the third choice props in Leinster. Realistically, you know, they're the third choice in Leinster, because if Keane second choice, and you have Slimani probably second choice tight head. And that's a worry. What's happened to the other in the other provinces? There's no young prop in Munster at the moment, the Farrell could pick, I don't think, or old prop. Connacht, we know what they have. Once you want is Finlay. And they've got, you know, really good pros there, but probably none of them putting their hand up to step up. And then obviously in Ulster, it's the same. Tom, they were looking at Tom as a Loosehead. You know, Tom is obviously very powerful, very athletic, explosive. I think it was about 4 years ago Farrell brought him in as part of that training squad, because he obviously saw power there, and he knows that that's going to be a factor. But just, it's so slow for our props, isn't it?
Would you be concerned at how reluctant Farrell has been to you? Like, you mentioned Tom O'Toole's been in squads now for 4 years. Would you be a bit concerned about how reluctant Farrell seems to be to put him in at the deep end?
Yeah, but I think it's justified. I think it's okay. Based on, yeah, I don't think he's been hard on him, to be fair. I'd say he would love to have a little bit more evidence to be able to go with it, you know? They know that this is an issue of an area of concern. But his job is to try and win test matches, and he still feels that, you know, Keane and Tom are the next best in. I think Beelam's interesting. I heard Ty was injured on Monday, and I look back at Finlay's record for Ireland. He's actually beaten the All Blacks four times. He's been on the field, you know, which is, when you think that O'Driscoll and O'Connell didn't ever bet them, it just shows you how momentum has kind of swung.
And this conversation isn't a slide on Finlay Beelam, because I would say in the last 2, 3 years, he's a player who has peaked a lot later in his career than others have. And in the last 2, 3 years, he's become a very, very important part of the Ireland team. You think back to the Grand Slam 2023 Six Nations, where Furlong missed the first three games. Beelum started those first three games and was absolutely outstanding. Made the team of the championship, even though he picked up an injury. Only played 2.5 games. He got injured, and Tadhg Furlong obviously came back in. So, you wouldn't necessarily be worried about Beelum going out there tomorrow, in my opinion.
No, but I'm not.
It's more the long term stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, he's older than Tadhg. And okay, you know, he obviously, as you say, he was a late developer. He didn't have a huge amount of miles on the clock early, but it's scary, actually. It's scary, and it's a big. And I don't. The problem is, I think it's been obvious for 4 or 5 years that this was an issue, but it'll probably come to a night like tomorrow night where Tadhg is missing, Porter maybe gets injured early, and we get destroyed. And then everyone goes, "Oh, we need to fix this." But unfortunately, or fortunately, we haven't been exposed to a massive level. The New Zealand game in the World Cup, you know, we had our best cattle. The scrum cost us whatever 3 penalties and probably cost us the game, but it wasn't the sole focus point. There was other areas that we looked at. And I hope it doesn't get to that. The last time I remember a really bad blow up was Twickenham, you know,
2012.
And that led to lots of different things and focus. But we're only one injury away from a big crisis, I fear. And this All Black scrum, their lineout is poor. And will be even worse with the change up. Taylor being injured will even be worse tomorrow night, you would imagine, on their ball. But their scrum has a real nice look about it. I think that could be an area that may go against us. And if it does in test matches, it can affect the result. And that's probably the biggest fear I have about tomorrow night is around our scrum, particularly late in the game.
Yeah, and on that, so it was interesting. I was out at Scott Robertson's press conference yesterday, and he was asked, does Tadhg Furlong's injury change anything from their preparation point of view? And he was straight up. He said we see some opportunities, was what he said with the Ireland scrum there. You obviously mentioned the World Cup game last year where Ireland conceded 3 penalties. The Ireland players and management have been fairly open and on record about the fact that they don't think those penalties were justified, and they thought they should have gone their way. Tyrrell Lomax for New Zealand was up for media as well yesterday, and you know, he was propping opposite Andrew Porter that day, so I asked him for his opinion on, you know, being in the thick of it, what his recollection was, and you know, he stayed fairly coy on it. He said, you know, anytime he concedes penalties, he also thinks they shouldn't have been penalties as well, and was very complimentary. But this is going to be a huge area of the game, because it has been. John Fogarty, coming leading up into the Emerging Ireland Tour, spoke very, very well about how the Irish coaches weren't happy at all with the way the scrum went over in South Africa as well. So,
yeah,
you know, the game against New Zealand, it wasn't a one-off. There have been issues there, and we've spoken about it in the last few weeks as well with Leinster, where they're being a little bit over-aggressive. They're winning a lot of penalties, but they're conceding a lot of penalties. This, you know, this is an area of the game that could have a huge say on what happens on Friday night.
No, 100% could. And it's a big test for Fogarty. It's a big test because this All Black pack, they have a size advantage, they have a weight advantage, they have a power advantage. They want to scrum. They've got a different mindset. I think, to be honest, they probably saw what South Africa were doing with their scrum. And for a couple of years, New Zealand were just happy to have ball playing, you know, front rowers. Mm. But I think they've seen how South Africa have used the scrum as a weapon. And they've started to pick and profile players who can actually match that. Obviously, when they play against teams who don't have the depth that South Africa have, overpowered them. And so I thought it was a massive part of the swing back, the comeback against England, for holding on against England.
Yeah,
I've watched them in the Rugby Championship. I think it's a weapon for them. And when you're away from home on a November night, against a team who want to play like Ireland do, I think that's an unbelievable weapon to have, and to try and go after Ireland there and just make the game, you know, made the game a set piece game. And it was interesting, O'Connell's been apparently doing a huge amount of work on our maul, because think Armada times hasn't been a weapon either, and it'd be interesting if we can get some change out of that. Can we get our line out right? I mean, big pressure on Kelleher and Herring, haven't played so little this year. And obviously, you know, New Zealand again have copied, to be fair, the South African defensive model. And England got into trouble last week trying to throw into heavily contested areas. New Zealand used to be a traditional mirror team, so they mirror your movement, which always meant if you were sharper than them, you'd be up just slightly ahead and have the ball away. Whereas now they're zonal, and as I said, England struggled with it. Ireland have tended to struggle against that type of defence in the past, but now we've come up against it so often, you would expect us to have a plan. So, but again, there's pressure on our set piece because we know Ireland score so many of our points from line out launch. So, there's a lot of areas that we're unsure of, even though we're obviously going into this game on the back of our last performance with Ireland, which was a win away in Durban, you know. But even when you look back at that second half, Neil, the South Africa match, like, it wasn't an amazing performance. The most remarkable thing about that game was, I suppose, the resilience and the grit.
Yeah, it was a brilliant first half.
Yeah,
first half, fell off in the third quarter, yeah. And then just kind of, do you know, I can't remember who it was now. Actually, had a great summary of it. I saw some South African person in the last couple of days mention the last 20 minutes of that game, and he said, like, Ireland went out and won the game while the rest of Durban was celebrating a win.
Yeah,
it was like South Africa just took the eye off the ball in the last 20 minutes. And in fairness, you have to go and take the result, and Ireland did. But yeah, it wasn't an all time great performance.
Yeah, it was interesting actually. At the end of the summer there, I was talking to some of the squad who toured South Africa with Ireland, and they said, oh, we saw a sight to Andy after that first test we'd never seen before. An angry Andy. And when you think back to his reign as head coach, he hasn't really had, you know, a run of games where you could question the player's application or physicality or energy. There's been obviously blips, but... you know, they've managed to get back on the horse pretty quickly. And I think he was so disappointed with that first test performance in South Africa that he let the players know about it. And they did get a reaction. They got a reaction. The first half was an amazing performance. But then they kind of fell off a little bit, as we kind of expected in that tour, because we felt it was a tour too many as such, you know, after a long season. But the South African didn't close it off, and Ireland found a way to win, which is brilliant. But I think this is a chance for Ireland to really lay down a marker. Obviously, we don't play South Africa this November. I have no doubt South Africa can rightly claim they're the best team in the world because of the back-to-back World Cups and win the Rugby Championship. But for us to beat the All Blacks on the way to beating, hopefully, Argentina, Australia and Fiji, it will be another significant scalp and lay down a marker that this team is still very much in the top two in the world, at least.
We spoke about the discipline around the set piece, and discipline in general is going to be really, really interesting because it seems to be a bit of an issue for both of these teams this season. You look at New Zealand last week, and while they ironed it out in the second half, 11 penalties in total, but 8 of those in the first half. And it was pretty much the sole reason why England had the opportunity to first stay in the game and then eventually move off ahead. Ireland obviously have had issues around discipline this season as well, where it's not even necessarily the amount of penalties they're conceding, but the clusters of penalty they're conceding, where they seem to be conceding 4 or 5 penalties in the space of 6 or 7 minutes and then might go 20 minutes without doing it. It's bunches and it's inviting pressure. And then the cards. Ireland had gone a run of 29 games where they had just 3 cards in total and have now had 7 yellow cards in the last 7 games. New Zealand this season have had 8 yellow cards in the last 7 games.
Yeah, well, let's look at New Zealand because obviously we don't get a chance to talk about them as much. I think that discipline issue is also a little bit around the fact that the aura of the All Blacks, you know, of being this team who are leading the way, who are the best in the world, has dropped off significantly. And that's a big challenge for this group. Like, they used to win games before the game started because the opposition didn't genuinely believe they would win, and the referees didn't believe that the All Blacks would get beaten. And we've, you know, Richie McCaw and his ability to flirt with off sidelines for most of his career is infamous. But that's what the black jersey gave you. It gave you a right to play on the edge. And I think because obviously they had you know, they weren't world champions in Japan or obviously in France. The fact that they get beaten regularly in the Rugby Championship, only won 3 out of 6 games this year. The fact that Ireland went down there, just slowly chipping away. The fact that Argentina won a first test in New Zealand. They're not getting it all their own way anymore. The referees are seeing them as human. And also the opposition are seeing them as human and putting them under more pressure. And you're seeing more ill discipline. But it's a big thing for Robertson to fix, because as you're trying to find your game model, and they also play very loose as well. So, you know, they need to make sure that they control that penalty count, because they're making a lot of errors. I thought their skill set against England was as bad as any All Black team I've seen. Some of their unforced errors were pretty horrific. But then they have obviously X factor and match winning individuals and match winning moments. But it's certainly something that will have a big factor on the game. You would imagine Ireland would be able to get it sorted out. I think Ireland it's something that Farrell will be putting massive focus on. And we got a question on Twitter as well, just around who's in charge of Ireland's succession planning. Is it Farrell or Easterby? I think it's Farrell. I think even when he takes a sabbatical, he will have a big influence over selection for not just the squad but also team selection. So I don't think he's not offloading that responsibility. That's because he's the one who has to come back after the Lions tour and pick it up again. So I think, you know, as we see this Irish squad develop, it'll be Andy Farrell's fingerprints all over it.
One other question. I'm just looking through a couple of them here now. I'm throw a couple of quick fire ones out. Is Crowley the out and out first 5-8, or is Frawley going to be the incumbent going forward? I'm guessing that's an All Black fan, given they asked, is he the first choice 5-8?
Yeah, it must be. Yeah, we don't hear that much in Irish rugby circles, but for me, he is. I know his form has been poor, but Munster's form has been poor, and I rate him. I think it's great. We've seen a genuine contender now to step up, and Frawley is that. But again, unfortunately, Frawley probably hasn't had enough big games at 10 to be able to judge like for like. Crowley has had a lot of big games, and he's proven himself to be more than up to the task. So I think it's his jersey until something changes.
And that bit of competition is, there's nothing wrong with having that bit of competition from an Irish point of view, particularly with Sam Prendergast coming down the line then as well. Like, and obviously having Johnny Sexton involved in the camp. It was interesting on that, actually. Andy Farrell was saying Sexton won't be there tomorrow. You'd wonder, is part of that a conscious decision on Johnny Sexton's part that he doesn't want to be, you know, that I would say he would be fairly wary of the fact that if Jack Crowley misses a kick or misses a tackle or fails to find touch with something, there's a clever TV cameraman who's ready to pick out Johnny Sexton in the crowd and see his reaction. Part of me would not be surprised at all if Sexton is just taking everyone out of the firing line by sitting at home and watching that on TV.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. He's not in this game for building his own profile. I mean, he's always been obsessed about the game and not letting distractions hurt the team or himself. So I do think it will be a bit of a distraction. I think until they build up that relationship, that may be something that comes down the road. But obviously, they haven't really been together for long enough. He's still finding his feet in terms of what his role is. He's adding his guidance and expertise where he can. But you know, once as he would have known himself, I mean, once that's kickoff starts, it's up to the fella on the pitch to do the job and manage the game. And having him run the tee or having him in the stand for tomorrow, particularly because it's in New Zealand, because of the only stuff, I just think, you know, the show is the show. The show is what happens between the white lines. And yeah, I think it's it would be, I'd be surprised if he was there in the coach's box. But yeah, we'll find out tomorrow night.
On that Ioannis stuff you just mentioned there as well, it was funny. Scott Robertson was asked about it yesterday and he straight up, he laughed it off and said, no, it hasn't come up in any team PowerPoints. Andy Farrell was asked about it, about would it add an extra little bit of spice into the game. And in fairness to Farrell, he said, you know, you hope it does. That's yeah, kind of what you want. He's very much embracing it all. Now, he has been stressing, as have all the players, this isn't a revenge mission, which, to be honest, I'm not really buying. It feels like it is, but
Neil, it has to be. It has to be. It's just the nature of sport. I mean, they have taken away effectively not just 4 years hard work, a lifetime of hard work and dreams. And some will never get a chance to avenge that at a World Cup. So, but you can avenge it, you know, in a November international to a lesser extent, and you can get those bragging rights, and you can have that feel good factor you get from beating a top team. So I think there has to be a revenge, and I think they will. Both teams, New Zealand won't talk about revenge, but they'll talk about hammering home, you know, that dominance and not losing to Ireland again. You know what I mean? If they want to recreate this aura of invincibility, the only way to do that is actually be invincible. You know what I mean? And start winning rugby championships, start beating all the Northern Hemisphere teams, do a clean sweep on tour. That's how you create a generational side. And Robertson was able to do that with the Crusaders. He's had a difficult enough start, but reasons for that difficult start. You mentioned him to start some of the personnel, but now he's into it now. And you know, other All Blacks coaches would have come to November or come to Europe in November and had a clean sweep. So I think there's a bit of pressure on them. But if they get it right, they can start to really strengthen that All Black jersey again. And there's a lot of issues in domestic rugby in New Zealand. So there's a lot of expectation and pressure on those senior All Blacks to lead the way forward.
Yeah, and it hasn't been an ideal season even as well, if you factor in, like, you know, a coaching reshuffle with was it Liam McDonald that stepped away as well. So there have been a couple of bits to work through. A couple of last little bits before we finish up, I do want to ask you about, because you kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier on in the podcast, and we spoke in detail about it a couple of weeks ago. The new interpretation that referees have been kind of dictated around the kick escorts and what's happening there, and trying to create more of a contest in the air where there's less blockers being allowed. What have you seen in the last couple of weeks? Is this being, A, is it being enforced? Are teams adapting to it? Is it having a noticeable effect on the game? Are you seeing any kind of a change?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a change. The most noticeable game was England New Zealand, just because Scotland Fiji was a bit of a Baba's match. New Zealand Japan, there was only two box kicks in the whole game, and there was contestables. But I think the referee's eyes are much more focused on the box kick, just because there's a period of
stability there.
A static block of 5 seconds, so they can actually get into it. Whereas if you kick contestables off 10, or even kickoffs, the it's not as obvious as that box kick tends to be, even though it's valid for all areas, all high contests, all high kicks. They're focused on what they're calling access. And now with the ref mic being broadcast over the stadium speakers, which I thought Twickenham kind of worked really well.
Yeah.
It's very clear that the referees are screaming at the team catching the ball, access, access, which just means effectively they're all running back. They're still getting back towards it, and there's still a lot of bodies there. But the person who's in line of where the ball is going to be caught is very conscious that they can't be picked up there. So what we're seeing is one-on-one contests in the air, and we're seeing some fractured possession. The fear we had was there was going to be a load of knock-ons, and I was going to create more scrums, and obviously that would be counterproductive for what World Rugby want. I wouldn't mind, but that would be counterproductive for what World Rugby want, and maybe the TV companies want. They want less stoppages. They want more chaos. And I think it's going to change the profile of your back three. You know, if you're weak in the air, it's going to be hard to pick you. And you might say, oh, sure, look, if you're a Munster fan, Connacht fan, Ulster fan, or Irish fan, you say, oh, well, our back three players are amazing in the air. Well, now you're going to really find out because they've basically been amazing in the air with unbelievable protection, whereas what's now going to happen is, can they actually catch a ball, in an aerial contest with someone else? And that's going to change it up. So I think they now are under big pressure. Obviously tens have been in the backfield quite a bit. They've been quite comfortable by and large, but this is going to change the whole area. So a friend of mine was over with Eddie Jones on some CPD in the week of the match, and the week before New Zealand played Japan, which was the first game played under these rules. And he was asking Eddie what were they going to do, and he said, look, we're obviously not a box kicking team, but we do kick off 10 a lot, and we kick contestables off 10. So basically the ruck is on the left, 9 to 10 box kick, or sorry, contestable to the right wing. Okay. And he said, we think that the referees are going to be watching the escort on that, the protection. So we think we can win more of those back than we traditionally did. Traditionally, they would have actually just planned to tackle that guy and counter ruck, or just change the point of defense. And he was saying, well, because that winger who's catching the ball doesn't have the blocker that he normally had, the other person in the backfield is going to have to go further across to basically be there to pick up the scraps, if you get me. Okay. And that means that where he has come from, which would be the left wing, is going to be open. And we're going to kick, if we get that ball back, we're going to basically go 9 to 10 and kick it back to where it came from, right? If you get me. And actually, it was interesting. So I don't know if you remember this, but New Zealand got one back on the right hand side. And straight away, they went to kick it back to the left where there was big space. But Itoje sprinted out of the line and got a block down. And so it tells me that Jason Holland and New Zealand had seen it the same way Eddie Jones saw it, is that, okay, it's not where we get the ball back, it's what we should do with it next. And again, I think World Rugby would have thought, oh, they're going to play. But actually, it seems as if, and this is a very small sample size, but it does give us an insight into what those elite coaches are thinking. They're actually saying, well, where's the space? And okay, the defense might be disorganized, but the real space is in the backfield again, with another kick. So look, there's no doubt Ireland saw that. There's no doubt, as I said, New Zealand had that policy. So the backfield is going to be a little bit more open. Do you know who's really poor in the backfield? Is Will Jordan. His positioning is really, really, really poor. Just been looking back at some games from behind the post footage, and I've seen teams try and exploit
Do
that.
you mind me asking, specifically since he's playing more at full back, or
Yes.
even
No.
as a winger, is he a little bit off the
Winger,
ball?
winger, winger. He's a bit all over the place. And I don't know whether he just his concentration level, or he doesn't understand his role, or he's a bit lazy. But he's not covering the ground and the space that he should be. And I would be shocked if Ireland don't try and exploit that. And it's do you remember this try Stockdale scored with the late sweep back? It'll be off set piece, I would imagine, and. Whereas most of our set piece plays, tend to be two or three phases and keep the ball in hand, there may be some element of trying to exploit him in the backfield, through his kick, through kicking. Obviously, you can exploit his lack of position through running as well. But I think that that's an area that we could potentially profit from. And again, like you want him to be stress defending because you don't want him, having the ball in his hand running at you, and we saw that we've fallen on our sword there already, because he's amazing with the ball. But definitely as a fullback, his positioning is very unorthodox compared to other international fullbacks, and I think that creates an opportunity that Ireland will, I would imagine, try and exploit.
That's one to bookmark anyway. Good thing he's
Yeah, let's
good at
see.
with the ball in hand, as you
Yeah.
said. He's all right going forward. And I'm almost certain as well he scored a try every time he's played against Ireland.
No, look, he's a ridiculously good player. I'm thinking. I'm being very, very hard on him there. But if there's one weakness in this game, it's that.
Last question I have for you. I'm gonna throw you a very quick pop quiz sort of comparison. We were talking about how this Ireland team, this is an Ireland team that has been picked to win this week. New Zealand, probably less so given their transition. Do you want to take a stab at what the average number of caps is in the Irish starting lineup this weekend?
Jesus.
I've given you no chance for
Yeah,
prep at all, Mr.
no.
Fairless.
Let's say start in the starting team alone.
Starting team, 1 to 15.
Ba, 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 ba. 45.
Okay. And in New Zealand's starting team?
Jeez, I could be way off here. Because round Broderick after the game was saying that the All Blacks starting 15 was way more experienced than his in terms of caps. The All Blacks, geez, I can't, 40.
Right, yeah, you weren't far off on either,
Good,
and
because I could.
I
I'm
brought
worried
the,
I'm going to be.
I brought this up because it's actually a great example, I suppose, of how sometimes a stat can be a little bit
Yeah.
misleading, because we're talking about this Ireland team being so vastly
Yeah.
experienced. New Zealand starting 15 has a higher number of average caps per player. They have
Okay.
45 average caps per player. Ireland have 42, but I
Okay.
suppose when you look at the Ireland team, it's probably an older team where the likes of Abundiaki, Jameson Gibson-Park didn't start earning test caps
Yeah.
until much later in their career. But the big difference then is on the bench, an average of 62 caps per player for Ireland compared to 27.5 for New Zealand, where you have what three players over 100 caps for Ireland. Ian Henderson 80 plus as well. A lot of experience there. But yeah, I found that funny how don't always take a stat at face value. Sometimes it
No.
can be. Sometimes it can tell you
Yeah,
something
look
very
at the
different.
yeah, 42 and 45 is probably the sweet spot, you know
Yeah.
what I mean? But you know, one of the other questions we had just to finish on that is wingers, you know. Someone said, oh, like Jimmy O'Brien, where's all the wingers? I do think, and again, you look at Mark Talia, and you can, like James Lowe's is a phenomenal player, Mac Hansen, a phenomenal player, but probably behind that, you know, Jacobs had bounced back to form a little bit. Jimmy O'Brien has done well for Ireland. Obviously, he's versatile. Again, there's probably not a long list of international form wingers. Nash did really well for Ireland last year.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably lacking out and out speed. I'm probably lacking a, you know, across, like obviously Balogun has got a load of pace. Shane McCarthy and Kilgallen obviously did well the other night, but just in terms of, you know, real finishing speed,
A bit of
there's not,
magic dust.
yeah, magic dust. And like Lowe has it, I think he's the leading offloader in the last year in international rugby. Mac has obviously had an injury coming back to form, and he could fire up tomorrow night, but. Yeah, it's another area we focused on props at the start, and now we're definitely need to finish on wings. I'd say Farrell would like one or two more to be just popping their head up as future international.
I would have thought on the wing. I think anytime someone has come in, they've generally done a pretty decent. Like Calvin Nash came in relatively seamless. Jordan Larmour's had to pop in for a game or so in the last year or so as well. Jimmy O'Brien was mentioned. Obviously, you know what happened with Jimmy O'Brien as Farrell moved away from him. Like he's just been unlucky with injuries. Where in 2023 he was one of Farrell's guys and always did quite well. So I suppose yeah, it's looking for someone with that bit of magic dust to come in and just kind of catch the eye. That's probably where we'll leave it. I'll push you for a prediction. What way are you leaning tomorrow night?
Do you know what? I've been swinging back and forth on this all week. I know Ireland are favourites. There's still a lot for me. There's a lot of unknowns about Ireland, and that's making me less confident. I was sure we would win the World Cup, and we obviously didn't. So my prediction there was wrong. But I think Ireland would get it done. But the worry I have is just how easy New Zealand can score, you
Yeah.
know, and score seven, score
Yeah.
seven.
Score
So,
how easily they can score without looking like they're going to score as well.
yeah, exactly. So I don't need like everyone else is chasing eight, like 22 entries and how many points you score per entry. they can literally live off scraps. And in fairness, it's actually Wayne Smith did a really good article last week, kind of praising. So his nickname is the Professor. He
Yeah.
like most good things that have happened in New Zealand rugby over the last 30 years, he's had his fingerprints on somewhere. But he's basically saying it's great to see New Zealand go back to their traditional roots, strengths, and value those players who have X factor, and not be obsessed about attacking shape, and patterns, to actually, just let those X factor players do their thing, which sounds quite a hands-off approach to coaching. But I suppose it puts more pressure then on a culture, and it puts more pressure on your selection. Selection, like getting the right players together and giving them enough shape that they're not playing blind. But that is interesting. I mean, looked at the New Zealand 15 game against Munster. Munster did so much right, yet New Zealand 15 scored 38 points, and often in the blink of an eye. And likewise in Twickenham. I mean, New Zealand outscored England 3 tries to 1. But yes, England are saying their defense was amazing. And that's the danger with this team, is that they might not have a huge amount of ball, but could hurt us. And then you're chasing the game, and we were there before. They're well able to defend as well. What was really interesting in that game in Paris, and you'd have to imagine because it worked, they're not going to be too radical in terms of changing it. But when Ireland had the ball, they really sat off Ireland, and they kind of let Ireland play in front of them, and never and didn't make big defensive errors, which that's kind of how Ireland hurt teams, is that someone tries to be over clever, someone gets really tired and jumps out of the line or jumps in to make a double tackle, and Ireland play the right pass late, and they make a line break, and then they hurt you. New Zealand in that game kind of were very passive, and Ireland really struggled to engage them. And then Ireland kept going to wit because it was there for them. But then the problem was for Ireland when it came off an edge, New Zealand didn't make any mistakes, and they had the physicality and power to be able to make an arm wrestle and slow the ball down. And like the last period, like Ireland put a lot of really nice shapes against them, but they just kept their discipline. They gave up yards in the on the edges, but they won it back in the middle. And we end up getting exhausted. And I know you can argue the last penalty was penalty for us rather than them, but effectively, they put in place a defensive plan that we hadn't seen much or before, and executed it really well. And if they do that again tomorrow night, we may end up getting frustrated.
Yeah, and that actually kind of that was part of my thinking as well. And to be honest, it's why I'm actually probably leaning towards Ireland on Friday night. It was looking back on last year's game and how New Zealand basically played almost error-free rugby for 80 minutes, and how perfect they were across the 80 minutes. And I was just looking back on it the other day, going like, I'm struggling to see how they can replicate that. Ireland didn't have a single put into their own scrum across an entire game of rugby. Like just removing an attacking platform from Ireland across the whole game. That's probably why I'm leaning towards Ireland tomorrow. I'm struggling to see how New Zealand can do that again.
Yeah, and look, it was the perfect storm for them. Obviously, like Ireland had beaten them. They'd gone through their autopsy the year before in terms of how they were coaching, how they were playing. They went to the World Cup under the radar, and Ireland were the favourites. And the big game players, the Sevillas, the Whitelocks, the Barretts, the Sam Kanes, they stepped back up to levels that they hadn't seen for a while, and executed an unbelievable game plan. What we've seen in the Rugby Championship, what we saw last week in Twickenham, they're not there at the moment. They're not there at the moment, and Joe Schmidt isn't there either. So yeah, logically Ireland win, but I don't know. I've got a bit of anxiety about it.
Right. We'll put a pin in it there, and we'll
Okay.
revisit this next week, and we'll see how it all goes. Bernard, it's been a pleasure having you on. We'll be back for two more podcasts next week. I would say Tuesday and Thursday again, looking back on this game against New Zealand and looking ahead to the next match on Friday night against Argentina. Bernard, thanks a million. We'll speak to you then.
Thanks, Matt.